Andy.
Over 20 years of the top-rated afternoon sports show in Tennessee. This is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Himes on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Hour number two of Sports Talk begins. I'm John Wilkerson. Vince Ferrara pinch hitting today for Jimmy Himes, and we head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline for a longtime friend of the program, and better yet, just a longtime friend joins us now in Tom Hart of ESPN and the SEC Network. He is a man with many hotel points as he jumps online. Tom, how are you?
I'm good, John. Vince, how are you guys doing today?
Doing quite great, well. Tom. And you, of course, have so many things that you've done everything and you continue to do all things. But I did, before we dive into just so much to unpack just in Tennessee's neck of the woods, but the fact that you were connected to and broadcast Braves baseball, I know that like many, you were touched personally by the loss of one Don Sutton.
Yeah, just a great guy overall. And John, I know if you know how big a baseball fan you are, if you dive into his numbers, they're simply amazing, just from a baseball perspective. He didn't miss a start in 23 years. Now, when I was with the Braves, I was there for Chippers last year. He had played four fewer seasons, had missed significant time with real injuries, torn ACL, ankle, and the like, and his body was ravaged by the time he got done playing, and he wasn't a pitcher. So the fact that Don Sutton took the ball every fifth day for 23 years shows his greatness. I just appreciated being around him because he was a guy that was always willing to share his expertise, his experience, and I loved just talking ball with him. And it could be everything from, you know, the grip on a knuckle curve to the proper way to sign a baseball and why he hated this generation whose signatures were illegible. And these discussions happened on the plane. They happened at the hotel bar after the game. They happened on the bus on the way to the airport. And so I just appreciated my time around him because there was always something to learn. And when we lose people like that, I think my first feeling is appreciation. And the second one is sadness for maybe not having the foresight to learn more from them, you know, to pick their brain even more about the game. And he was not just a baseball fanatic, but he was a broadcasting fanatic. I mean, he poured himself into the job. He had very clear opinions about how to do the job right and how to prepare for games. And that stuff that will stay with me forever.
Well, that it was amazing to see just how many people either shared stories and or experiences. And, Tom, it looked like that he was just as supportive as those that were in broadcasting as you were or are, and or players that were climbing the ladder trying to get to the top, or even just the opportunity to speak with one youngster, Russell Mays, who, of course, has done great things for many, many years with Fulton Broadcasting as well as other broadcast outlets, just by saying a quick hello to him at a Diamond dinner. I mean, it was just amazing. Yeah. What an incredible individual he was to simply all those that he happened to encounter.
I was up in Cooperstown when, you know, a trio of Braves went in, Maddox, Glavin, and Bobby Cox. And it was easy to see then, you know, where he stood in the world, because among the other activities were a Hall of Famers golf tournament out at this beautiful golf course. And we're there to get sound and do interviews and see people. And, you know, here comes Don Sutton to tee off with his foursome. And it's, hey, Tom, how you guys doing? What do we got going on today? And to which all the other media members, you know, immediately whip their necks to you and go, well, this guy must be important. Don Sutton just said hello to him. And so it was evident then. It was never more evident, though, than when the Braves went to Dodger Stadium. The Dodgers do an amazing job of appreciating their own. I feel like it's whether you're a Hall of Famer or not. And so to get off the elevator with Don and make the walk from the elevator to the press box was, you know, like being in a parade with a dignitary. And he loved it. He loved the attention. He loved the appreciation. But you would never know that if you were, you know, sitting on the bus with them or having a bite to eat with them pregame. And I think that was probably what made him special.
Tom, I know you've gotten out to do some games, but how are the in-home studios at the Palatial Estates?
I'm trying to put on my Don Sutton face and be positive. The fact that we have games and I'm allowed to work the games is fantastic. But from a broadcasting standpoint, it is absolutely miserable. I feel bad that there's not a single game that doesn't end that, and I take all the feedback with a grain of salt on Twitter, obviously, but there's not a single game that doesn't end where somebody is screaming at me because I didn't tell them who the foul was on or you know, what the call was. And I want to respond and say, you've got a better shot at that than I do. I don't know who the foul was on because I'm watching this thing on a laptop over a Zoom call. So I hate that the fans aren't getting, you know, that we're kind of leaving them in the lurch for some of these details. And I hate not spending time in the stadium to see my friends and coaches and players and all that work that I do on game day, which, you know, comes across and seems as simple as socializing, is really gathering information that I think fans would appreciate during the game, and that's lost too. So we're not roofing, we're not laying rebar, you know, we're not digging ditches. It's a minor inconvenience for a dream job.
Well, I remember you were the SEC football game you were doing where there was alarms going off and the lights went out, all kinds of things going on in the house. That was memorable. What have been some other memorable things that are a result of you doing in-home broadcasts?
Yeah, that was a big one. That was Kentucky at Mississippi State. Yeah. And we got a power surge. And in addition to trying to get back online and rejoin the broadcast, what was followed was the power surge kicking off my home alarm system that we could not shut off. So, you know, there's always – I think what we lose is how great these broadcasts could be if we're on site with no fans. I love the fact if you watched the Saints game the other day, Sunday night, you heard Drew Brees come to the line and say, kill, kill, kill. And then they turned to a run play and they picked up 7 yards. And after that, Troy Aikman pointed out that, hey, you heard Drew Brees kill the play at the line of scrimmage. And then he explained what that meant, why he did it. And those opportunities are there because these stadiums are empty. Mm-hmm. But we can't take advantage of them because we can't hear clearly. We can't hear what's going on in the stadium other than like a garbled tin can because, as everyone who's done business this year knows, it's coming over a Zoom call, which is not the furthest thing from high definition, which might be good for an accounting meeting, but isn't great for a television broadcast.
Hey, we're talking baseball, so wonder what you thought of the SEC's plan to have a regular schedule like they did last year in terms of the 10-3 game weekends in conference play, same opponents as a year ago, maybe in different order, and then the 26 non-conference games, which, as we talked to Tony Vitello about, is a challenge to try to fill or keep those games, and he was in favor of more conference games. Where do you stand on the SEC's decision to lay out the schedule that way this season?
Yeah, I understand Tony's concern. I also understand where the league is coming from. I think the hardest thing when it comes to sports this season is you have to plan for chaos, and nobody wants to do that. You have to ask yourself, what's the worst-case scenario, and how do we make the most of it? This schedule isn't put together as a worst-case scenario. This schedule is put together as, well, let's hope everything's fine. That's okay if you understand that you need flexibility within the season. So, for example, if Tennessee can't play a midweek game or they lose non-conference games, either because the opponents are having testing issues or positivity issues or whatever it might be, well, guess what? Then it would be great if you had the flexibility then to add a game that weekend against your conference opponent, even though it would be a non-conference game. We've seen that in other conferences in college baseball. The Big 12 among the Texas schools used to do it quite often, whether it was Baylor or Texas or when A&M was in the league, because they couldn't find good midweek opponents. So Baylor and Texas would just play on a Tuesday night and say, this is not counting for the standings, but we need opponents. And I think that flexibility is going to be key throughout the season.
So, Tom, what has been your reaction to everything that is swirling about Big Orange Country? Great thing that there was basketball last night to get Tennessee football fans' minds back from the ledge, right?
Oh, my gosh. The basketball result was absolutely shocking to me, especially considering who Florida was missing in that game, Castleton and Lewis, who were great players. But that's another story. I still have a lot of questions about how everything went down. I'm still very curious, and I think it's important to get those questions answered. And I know there's a lot of great, you know, reporters and writers that are going to continue to dig into that locally. I made this comment today on another radio station. I don't know another athletic director who was so involved with the football program. Everywhere we go, it is certainly not uncommon to see an athletic director at practice, to see an athletic director coming out of a coach's office, to see an athletic director talking with players and coaches and stuff like that. But from what I was told, I think it was the week of the Arkansas game when Tennessee's staff was having COVID issues, Phil Fulmer was actually involved in practice, and they got clearance for him to work with the offensive line in practice. You can't get much more involved than that as an athletic director, and that just begets a lot more questions. And what was the motivation and what was the result? And if the motivation was he just wants what's best for Tennessee, that I think that would be accepted at face value any other year. If there was any sort of motivation or Machiavellian background that by being so involved and entrenched with the coaching staff, that he would then be exposed to what they were doing that violated NCAA rules, then that takes you in a lot of different directions. And that would be a real concern. And if I were administration, I'd want answers to those questions. I'd want to know what the motivation was from the person who turned the staff in. To me, the red flags that were present around Jeremy Pruitt's hiring from day one are the same things that were his undoing at Tennessee. And number one was his lack of experience as a head coach in a place with the spotlight like the SEC provides. And I still think he's a great defensive coordinator. I love talking ball with him. I think if this thing hangs over his head, it's going to impact his career. But otherwise, he could still have a great career as a defensive coordinator at the level of the SEC. But for anyone to be surprised, they would just have their head in the sand because the red flags were there for his shortcomings when he was hired, and that just came home to roost.
Tom, Kevin Steele was referred to as the acting head coach. And with them having to hire an athletic director before a head coach, it can certainly take a while. And we can look ahead into the possibility, perhaps, of Kevin Steele having to be the, air quote, acting head coach maybe through the 2021 season. In today's world of major college football, what do you think about that kind of scenario for a program to have a coach not permanent at the helm in the SEC especially?
Well, I think it's difficult to do, not just with the talent you need to recruit every year, but from what I understand, the talent that's coming due within the state of Tennessee within the next year. I mean, I'm not a recruiting guy, but I've been told that's a really important recruiting class, and it's hard to get guys to come if that's the scenario. I think you need to find – I think there's a very interesting comp. You don't have to look far to find a coach that came to a program that was in absolute shambles, that had great potential and good history, who had done it at a higher level, but was kind of tired of all the BS and wanted to do it his way and run a clean program. And all you have to do is look down the hill to Thompson Bowling Arena. You have in Tennessee's basketball coach, a guy who has said, you know what, if I get this job, I'm not going to recruit the knuckleheads. I'm not going to recruit the bad guys. I'm going to be given time and patience to build this program the right way. And a three-star like Grant Williams can come in here and have time to develop into an NBA draft pick and the SEC player of the year. I think you'd be in better shape if you're a Tennessee, instead of finding an up-and-comer who did not have SEC head coach experience or even major college head coach experience, in finding a guy who knows what it's like, who's been there, who's been to the top, and would be patient enough to deal with everything that he's going to have to deal with. So you asked about Kevin Steele, and my first thoughts go to Gus Malzahn. You know, I think there are some comps to be made between where Gus is in his career and where Tennessee's basketball coach was in his career when he left Texas. And, you know, maybe I'm just being too simplistic, but I think if you could find another Rick Barnes, you would hit it right out of the park.
Tom, this is, of course, a conversation that will probably continue for months, but we appreciate your joining us today. Do need to ask, are there online Girl Scout cookie sales available through the Hart household?
We have officially retired from the Girl Scout selling business. Before we did so, though, we did what anyone would do. We ordered a box for ourselves and for the, you know, our trash men and the bug guy and everybody else. And so we've handed out a couple of those, but otherwise they are being consumed by me as I continue to work on my COVID-22.
And since you mentioned the word consumed, what do you think the world and this corner of the universe would be like if everybody had somebody that looked at them the way that your good friend Cole Kubelik looked at that awesome blossom? That,
yeah,
blooming onion. Yes,
I tell you
blew
what,
the joke.
No, the marketing worked. I was on the road last week and I hadn't had lunch. I was getting ready to go to a game, and I drove by an Outback Steakhouse and I said, you know what, I think I deserve a steak at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I did. So whatever marketing agreement he had in place beforehand, it was a good solid investment by the restaurant.
Tom, we always appreciate it. Thank you so much. Good luck with the broadcast. Continue from home. And here's hoping we get to cross paths soon in an SEC baseball stadium.
That would be wonderful. Thanks, guys. Have a wonderful day and a good week.
You Thanks, as Tom. Well. That's Tom Hart of ESPN and the SEC Network joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break and be back with more. With Vince Ferrara, I'm John Wilkerson. This is Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of The Sports Animal.
I quit my bed until I was 19. There's no shame in that.
We are 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Vince Ferrara. Back to the phones we go. It's Aaron who joins us. Hello, Aaron.
Hey, guys. How are you doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
All pretty good. I actually called in yesterday. I was a little over-caffeinated. I apologize for that. But I just want to follow up with something that John mentioned. I think he said when Jeremy Pruitt came in that his approach reminded you of Nick Saban or a Bill Belichick. Is that correct? Did you mention yesterday?
I don't remember mentioning. Vince, did you mention that? Or was that
Jimmy? That Vince?
No.
Who knows?
That Pruitt's hiring was comparable to Saban or Belichick?
No, the approach was Jeremy Pruitt's approach when he came in. I'd kind of talked about Jeremy Pruitt's character and some of the things, his role.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. No, I think I mentioned that you've got members of the same coaching tree because Belichick essentially not begat, but Saban worked for Belichick, sure, and Pruitt worked for Saban. I said that, yeah, I would be surprised if somebody who didn't have that exposure that they had to how Saban ran his organization is that he would not have perhaps been aware as to all that was going on under his umbrella.
I got it. And I guess that kind of resonated with me because, you know, obviously Pruitt has come from some pretty prestigious programs and worked under clearly elite coaches that are very demanding. And so, you know, when you look at that, obviously to operate at that level and be successful, you have to have knowledge, experience. You have to be obviously work ethic, discipline, those things. And so what I'm seeing on the right, you know, that's the left hand. You look at the right hand, and what we're seeing is not just cheating, but cheating badly and cheating loudly. I mean, this seems like it was just reckless and flagrant and egregious. And I guess that's where I was trying to really make those connections between how do you take somebody that probably has some very good characteristics, that understands how these programs work, what you can do, what you can't do, and then you end up with this in a pretty, you know, short period of time with such egregious fouls that they're going to be called. I mean, you guys, I think, kind of use the analogy of, you know, with infractions, are you doing a 60 and a 50 or, you know, an 80 and a 50? Well, mm-hmm. This is doing 150 and a 50 and a red convertible Ferrari, you know, throwing hundreds and chicken McNuggets out the window. It's going to get caught. So I guess that was kind of where I was trying to make that connection. And Vince, you mentioned too, you know, irrespective of moral fiber or character, that doesn't alleviate you from contractual obligations, which is totally correct in this case. I guess right. My problem is, as a fan, I hate to think that anyone would do this, but to think it was so infiltrative that it went all the way up to the head coach and to Philip Fulmer and potentially beyond. To me, it makes a difference whether this was a low-level thing or this was just a systemic failure and there was, you know, there was true malicious intent. And I guess if that makes sense to you guys.
Yeah, because I say what I said on the one hand, and then you never know exactly what walking orders are. And because
right.
I know that there have been coaches over there that have simply told people who worked for them, I don't want to know how you get it done. I just want you
right.
to get it done. So, and I,
right.
but, and so I can't imagine somebody would be a control freak in one instance and then just say, hey, you do what you have to do to get player X here.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I think this was probably an absentee landlord. And Vince mentioned this, and as well did Tom, you know, you got a guy that just wants to probably go in and coach football and all the other things that go along with that. Maybe go by the wayside, and unfortunately those aren't things you can let go. My other question is this, and I'm having some problems understanding. So you look at where the timeline is, and in November, obviously somebody steps forward, you start the internal investigation, which is routine, and then pretty quickly they reach out to the guys that are billing $500 an hour, right? This is a pretty famous and prestigious firm with these types of cases. So I think pretty early on they had an idea that there were infractions, you had important people involved, and they were severe. So at what point in this process does Tennessee have to say, you know, we've got evidence of something pretty damning? Why are those coaches, or those, maybe it's the head coach, maybe it's assistants, what have you, why are they allowed to continue to coach and to continue to recruit and those types of things? I know they pulled gray at the last game, but, you know, we were going to go to a bowl game, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously continue to recruit. So that's where I'm having a problem wondering what line of communication was going to Pruitt, and then what were the other lines of communication between the attorneys and those types of things? Because I got to tell you, Jeremy Pruitt, it didn't seem like he's a guy that knew, you know what, the jig is up. You know, they found out that I've been doing some pretty egregious stuff and going to get hit with level one. It's business as usual, though. So there's a disconnect for me, and I don't know why you would not step in and say, you got some bad operators here, and we got to stop this. Obviously, we have to address it, but more importantly, we have to prevent other problems from moving forward. So if that makes sense to you guys.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that your narrative one is that begs, I think, proper questions and are fair to wonder. And, Vince, I don't know exactly at what point in time that they would say it could have been something that in working with, first of all, the internal investigation with compliance as well as the law firm or the guys they brought on to take the independent look at this, it might have just been, right now we have this, and when we're looking to prove that, or, I mean, I don't know exactly how that might have gone. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he's right. This happened pretty quickly from when they went to the inquiry. They went to the general counsel first, and then it got into the inquiry, and then that's when they went to the services of that firm that is experienced and is very costly. So, yeah, it does raise a ton of questions on who knew what, when, and why weren't there more actions. My guess is probably from a legal standpoint that because Jeremy Pruitt's contract was looming, and then a lot of other people that they didn't want to maybe rush to get people out the door before they had all their ducks in a row from a legal standpoint, from having the report and the investigation complete, which is another kind of interesting aspect now, is they made these moves when they admitted that the investigation isn't over yet. So what if they find right. out more information? So that's another interesting, different kind of timeline. But there are a ton of questions. Who knew what, when? Are more names going to come out after the fact? People that aren't here now. It's something that I think eventually will come out, especially with the NCAA being involved. And you got to hope that there aren't a number of players that were playing or might be deemed ineligible.
Exactly right.
Yeah, and then moving forward, because Don DePalma didn't answer that question when she was asked about it on Monday.
Right.
So who knows what players won't be eligible also. And then to your point, what might be different with what Pruitt at Alabama and learning how to do things there and the characteristics versus now? You're in a completely different role now as the CEO of a program. So I think that's where you could either get in desperation, not have the experience and maybe act out of character or whatever to do what you got to do, because now you don't have the structure and the resources you did then, and it's your butt on the line with all these things that you don't want to deal with, and then you start involving other people, and then that's how it kind of can snowball on you. That's just a hypothetical, but I think that's where you can get out of the positive characteristics that got you the job into now doing all these things that help get you to this point.
Sure. And you don't Johnny Cochran or Alan Dershowitz for a jaywalking ticket, right? I mean, if you know that you're going to be in big trouble, right, you don't go after those guys. I really do wonder, and particularly just the way Pruitt carried himself. Again, these guys are continuing to recruit. It looks like his attorney said, they were sitting there. Pruitt didn't even know if they had gone through the transcripts yet, and there's just a huge time disconnect. It sounds like they got the letter on Friday from the firm. Obviously, they were probably waiting for that so they could see the level one and know they could go forward with firing for cause. But I just wonder when Pruitt was informed, if he was and I'm not saying he wasn't responsible. He's at the top. But I just wonder if he was given information and due process to remedy, to intervene, if they knew things were going on. And maybe just let that spool out a little bit to build a case. And maybe that's a conspiracy. I don't know. But the reason I'm saying this is, we talk about coaches coming in. You look at the optics. They're not good right now. And I think, obviously, the program's not in a great place. We've got winning NCAA violations, potentially. But the big thing is you want to know that you've got a foundation and a structure there that's going to support you, and that there's not infighting. And you sit around and go, who's in charge? I mean, I see the title on your desk, but you're really not the one calling the shots. And so I think, you guys mentioned inexperienced coach, maybe not as much, but if you got somebody that's worth the big checks, I think they're probably going to be hesitant to come in if they feel like this is not stable. This is potentially toxic, and you've got, forces kind of aligning against you or not necessarily playing together. So that just to me seems like we've got to get our ducks in a row internally before we can even think about getting somebody, particularly a big name, to come in here. Or we're just going to keep hitting the reset button on this.
Yeah, I think that's well said. Aaron, we appreciate the call. We're late for a break. We'll get that now as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Credibility, honesty, and a dedication to bring you the sports information you deserve each afternoon. This is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk rolls on. I'm John Wilkerson. Vince Ferrara pinch hitting for Jimmy Hyams. And why don't we go ahead and bring you more from last night's post-game reaction. Here is what John Fulkerson had to say after Tennessee's loss in Gainesville.
John, Coach talked quite a bit to us about, the need for more leadership. I'm sure that, he's sent that message to you. Just, how do you take it? What steps do you take to try to make that happen?
It starts with myself, being a better leader. I've never really had to be in this position before, so it's new and it's different for me, but I've got to do a better job, and I take full credit and full responsibility for what happened tonight. I don't think that that's who we are. I know that's not who we are. So, you know, it's on me for this loss. Everything can go on myself. Just like you said, not being a leader, not getting the guys ready to play, me not coming to play. So we've got to see the things that we got to get better at from film for this game, and we got to get better.
John, what went wrong from the start? Rick talked a lot about that too, the starters' first couple of possessions not being locked in and ready to go. What went wrong there?
Right. I think you said it right there. I think that we weren't locked in. We weren't ready to play. I think we came out, you know, just taking their punches. We weren't throwing punches at them. And so we've got to, especially the starters, and especially I call myself a leader on this team, so I've definitely got to be better. And so it starts with myself, Eve, the starters, just really setting the tone early.
John, you mentioned, you know, you're a big leader on this team. What do you expect moving forward, you know, next practices and then the game on Saturday versus a tough opponent, Missouri, that you guys already faced? What do you expect moving forward, taking the lessons from this loss?
You know, I just think we got to watch the film and see what went wrong. I know rebounding, ball screens, defense. I know we didn't shoot it well tonight. So, you know, I just think we need to have a really good overall practice, and we can't focus too much on this because we have another game on Saturday that we're ready for, and so we just got to get better.
John, you mentioned rebounding. That was a big thing Rick focused on for you and Eve. How do you guys do that more consistently? Is that just a mindset thing, a practice habit thing? I mean, how does that become a steady priority on the court?
I think rebounding, going to class, everything is definitely a mindset and a will to and a want. You know, you just have to be aggressive and tenacious about rebounding and wanting to get extra possessions for your team.
Why do you think there are stints then when you guys aren't as aggressive and tenacious as you need to be?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Folky, I know it's kind of a tough question to answer, I guess, but when you talk about leadership, what does that word sort of mean to you? I know you're not always the kind of get in somebody's face and kind of point fingers and challenge them kind of guy, at least in front of us. I mean, what do you mean when you talk about leadership?
I think somebody that the guys can count on that is going to be there for them through the thick and the thin, you know, the good and the bad, when things are going well, when things are going bad. Someone that is going to hold them accountable, that is going to set the standard, that's going to keep the bar high, going to set the bar. And so we just need, and like I said, it starts with myself, everybody on this team to really just lock in and come together.
Would you have thought it was possible for this team to lose to anyone by 26 points?
Not really. You know, I didn't realize we lost by that much, but I guess that's why you play the game.
Comments from John Fulkerson. And Vince, we've now had the opportunity to share what were brief appearances, but no doubt about it, both with plenty to say from Josiah Jordan James and John Fulkerson. And I think, one, they take ownership of Tennessee's poor performance, dismal performance last night, and now, of course, they have to make sure that things get fixed and they get on track for Missouri, which no doubt will be pretty motivated to come in here and try and pay back what Tennessee did to them in Columbia.
No question. And now it gets to the point where it's not about talking about it. You got to follow it up with action. And Rick Barnes just kind of wanted more of that aggression from John Fulkerson and Eve Pons. All season long, even if on the offensive end and the boards. And so this is where it cost them a game. But he's been seeking that all along. So, you know, they've got to change a lot to really show that the message was sent. Remember, Fulkerson had another personal message sent to him. Rick Barnes put him on the bench late in the game. I don't know if it was the Alabama game or it might have been the Arkansas game, where he was on the floor at the end of the game, and he said that was a message that he received from that, but it hasn't resulted in drastically better overall play from those guys, and it is not in his nature to hold guys accountable and have the fire and things like that. but those guys are who they're relying on. They're going to have to get out of character and figure that out and make everybody else accountable and rise up to that level that they need them at, rather than just kind of, oh man, things aren't going well. Maybe somebody else will do it. Just like Jordan James said, we were just kind of waiting around, hoping for something to get better. They're not that good to where they can do that.
That's Vince Ferrara. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break and be back to close out hour number two of Sports Talk as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Now back to more of the most trusted sports information on the air. Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Himes on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Final segment to hour number two of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson. Vince Ferrara pinch hitting for Jimmy Himes. And Vince, just a chance if folks are just tuning in. So much going on, but Tennessee is right now, I guess, weighing the option, or I should say the request, that one, their top signee, Dylan Brooks, has asked to be released from his letter of intent.
Sorry, John, I couldn't hear you. Say that again.
Oh, sorry about that. But Tennessee right now has Tennessee's most important signee, or I should say the highest-rated signee from this class back in the early signing period in December, Dylan Brooks, has asked to be released from his letter.
Yeah, it's not good. And Tennessee has the hope that maybe they can, you know, hold on to him or get someone to convince him. But, you know, there's another player from the signing class that was blindsided as well. About Byron Young, he said he was blindsided by the news, but he's sticking with UT. And so, you know, for those that maybe didn't realize that something like this was going down, I'm sure Pruitt and staff wasn't talking about that. Then it's the unfortunate part, especially of that early signing period, and why, you know, a lot of us have reservations about it, because there's so many changes that happen with head coaches and position coaches after those kids are signed. And it's not fair to them. So I get it. But we'll see if maybe somebody can convince him that, you know, once they get the new head coach in, that it'll be somewhere he'll want to stay. But he had plenty of options. So I get it.
And Tennessee, of course, examining options as to who's going to be the next director of athletics for the University of Tennessee. And if folks want to share their opinion, they can go to our website and do exactly that, right?
That's right. Got a poll question. Just look in the big promo reels in the middle. And then also, if you go to the scroll down the bottom right side under the blogs, you will find our poll question there. A bunch of candidates. Surely there's more than that, but there's a bunch of them there you can vote on. And there's another candidate section there as well for you to be able to vote. So love for you to have your vote count, share it with your friends, and participate in that poll. And we'll be keeping updates on how it's not like a 24-hour poll. It's going to be up there for a while, so you can think about it, research the candidates if you want before you vote. So it's there for you, 991thesportsanimal.com.
And of course, there are plenty other reasons to go there and make that a daily part of your daily routine.
Yeah, 100%, John. There's so much post game going on there from last night. Some of what you've already heard here, and daily stories. You know, Kelly Harper talking to the media about the matchup with UConn, which we'll talk about later. Geno from earlier this week, he had some very interesting things to say about Tennessee and that series. So you can listen to that. And then the UT baseball schedule is up in the story section on our website there in the middle. You can get from the top, you can get to all the main stories, and then below that, links to all the different things that we have available, then podcast videos, then podcasts, and then all of our stories in that top story section. So there's so much content every single day for you to be able to either watch, listen to with podcast, or read blogs and so much more on our website. So it's just a ton of content there for you on a daily basis, largely on UT. Bookmark it and make sure you bounce around and look at everything in that menu section at the top to see all the content that we have available. 99.1thesportsanimal.com.
That's Vince Ferrara. I'm John Wilkerson. Up next, we turn our attention to the NFL as John McClain of the Houston Chronicle starts hour number three of Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.